This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Good morning. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer hanging with you here. I feel good today. I feel good. I got a lot of sleep. It's cold as can be, and we're just fighting it. We're fighting to stay happy.
Hey, who doesn't like a good old insert Hoth reference here?
It feels like -5 outside, Derek.
That's because the wind chill kind of made it that way.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So you're not that far off on your basis.
No, I'm trying to feel good. I'm ready to go.
Speaking of though, this is a sign of true friendship, right here. You pulled into the parking lot.
Yeah.
And I have a fatal flaw of if I use my seat warmers, I take my coat off in the car.
Oh, that's
so I'm standing in the parking lot with no coat on, waiting for you.
I saw that too, and I'm like, I'm taking too long to get out of the car. Like, I'm putting my phone in my pocket. I'm grabbing my water cup in my bag, and I'm like, this guy's in a hoodie and jeans.
And
he's dying out here.
And it's a thin zip up hoodie too.
Yeah, it's not good for this weather.
But that said, that's how I know I'm Buffalo coded.
And then I heard Alec Anderson was in Hawaii earlier today with Jeremy and Joe, and I'm like, oh,
but then he
man.
Just turns around and says, "That's fine, you know, you could stay indoors too."
Yeah, sure.
Great advice.
I'm like, all right, whatever, fine.
Hey,
he's still here.
He embraces the city, and so do I.
Yeah. Paul Hamilton brought this up too with Mike and Chris, where he's like, why was I not in Florida during this little break I had? What am I doing here?
This little break
I had and turned to like 15 degrees. It's tough. Winter's never going away.
No.
It is a battle.
It's February.
Yeah.
It's normal. It's okay.
Yeah, but the last few years, like we had spurts of like 40 degrees, 50 degrees. Hey, you can go golfing. Look at that. And I didn't necessarily need to go golfing, just the nice weather where I can open up some windows, get the fresh air in.
It's February. This is supposed to happen.
I want to roll down my car window.
You will be able to.
And feel the breeze on my face as I drive in.
Just
I'm like a dog.
Just not this month.
Ridiculous.
No, it's February.
It's February, which means it's almost March. And on that, we will be having UB Women's Head Coach Becky Burke coming on in just a little over 10 minutes here. But before we do that, I do want to kind of set the stage for today. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Josh Schmidt hanging with us as well. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It is franchise tag window opening day. It's going to be opened up until, I believe, March 4th.
Yes.
And so with that, are the Bills expected to do anything? No. They have not tagged anyone since before the Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott era. It's 2016, Cordy Glenn. So really, there's never been a reason or a need to use
the tag. They have a tendency to take care of things before it gets
Bingo.
To that point.
They don't get to the drama of it. It's kind of why the James Cook conversation has been so fascinating because, well, they've kind of been drama-free for the most part. So, no, they're not expected to be a part of this. But there are other teams that could be or really it feels like they're going to be. The Bengals with wide receiver T. Higgins, I think what also is going to be kind of interesting to see is what about Minnesota and Sam Darnold? I think they'll let him hit free agency and go with J.J. McCarthy. Mm-hmm. But there could also be something to, well, you won 14 games with him. You don't want to sign him to a big deal, but you don't want him to walk for free. Maybe you try to do something like that. I don't anticipate it, but they're going to be somebody to keep an eye on. However, ultimately, the franchise tag window opening up sort of signifies the real beginning of the offseason. Yes, we've had the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine Game, stuff like that, but this is ultimately the beginning. This is when teams are making moves for the next season. They're preparing themselves for free agency opening up in March and then the draft in April. And on that point, kind of tweeted it out as well. You can also reach us 803-0550 if you want to call in. What move do you need to see the Bills make? Could be the big trade for Myles Garrett. Could be a certain draft prospect you want. What move do you need to see be made for this offseason to be considered a success for the Bills? For me, it's a few of them. The main one really is no big drama. No big drama.
I've got potentially bad news on that front.
I know. But looking back to last year, and me and Josh talked about this yesterday, I don't want anything necessarily to come of the James Cook situation. Because really, what were we spending last offseason worried about constantly?
Stephon Diggs,
and who the hell is getting the ball? Now, this year may have proven to a certain extent, just trust the Bills, they'll be fine.
They have the quarterback, it's okay.
They'll be fine. But I'd rather not necessarily outright just trust them with a blank check. I'd like to have some insurances. I'd like to have some collateral here of like, nah, okay, you have my belief. They lose James Cook, Derek, and it all of a sudden, and I'm just for argument's sake, or there's drama that this could be his last ride. There is a feeling that all of a sudden in this draft, they have to start looking towards post James Cook. And I think this draft is going to be very important of reloading the defense and getting, I think, clear-cut players who can come in day one and contribute to this team. And if you're looking at a potential future of Cook's gone, or because I've seen a few callers and a few tweets about, you know, putting him in a trade package for somebody like a Myles Garrett, a Micah Parsons, a Max Crosby, all of a sudden it becomes, yeah, but now you do have to find another running back. Ray Davis and Ty Johnson are not going to be enough for how the Bills want to play football. It's, neither of them were the number one back. James Cook ultimately was.
Yeah, no, I think that to frame it with your question, with running back, obviously I'm expecting if something is coming of this and your objective is a failure, then the Bills will absolutely take a mid-round pick and go use it on a running back again. Mm-hmm. Something that this regime does regardless of what they have on the
All
running backs
time.
In the roster.
Mm-hmm.
For answering the question of what do I want for it to be a success this year, I started saying this the minute the Bills were eliminated, and my belief has been fortified thanks to that Super Bowl. They need a star on that defense. They need an impact player. I'm not worried about where.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in the secondary, awesome. I want it on the pass rush. Get an established chaos bringer for your defense. You do not have star power anymore on this defensive unit. You need some.
And that really was proven in these last, I would even say these last two Super Bowl champions, having some level of star power on their defense. Chris Jones, Trent McDuffie, Justin Reed for the Chiefs. Then you look at this Eagles team. It seemed like it was all over the place. Jalen Carter, Zach Bond, who I saw, I'm blanking on their name, but it was on ESPN talking about the statistics and the numbers mm-hmm. they saw from Bond. It was one of the best linebacker seasons they had seen in recent memory. Then you also go to two of their cornerbacks were Rookie of the Year candidates.
Yes, and there's different ways to get yourself a star player. I expect, though, it's easier to acquire one than draft one when you're picking at 30. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the draft is the draft and anything can happen. But I think for me to call it a successful offseason, I need to see the Bills do something about getting a star player on this team, on this defensive front, because they do not have a household name that can do what they are supposed to do. Von Miller, the idea was there. And up until his injury, he was producing like Von Miller. But unfortunately, luck plays into the factor. The Bills did not get the good portion of luck, and Von Miller rapidly declined. That does not stop you from pursuing the ideal of getting a superstar player on this defense. Do not let the past dictate what you do in the future. I expect Brandon Bean not to be scared about that sort of thing. It's not like the Sabres. And I expect that he'll be aggressive about adding a star piece to a defense and a difference maker. That was what was missing from the team last year. They were getting turnovers, yes. But it was live by the sword, die by the sword. And if you're not forcing turnovers, you're having problems.
No, that, I mean, that was a big thing. They were not a good third down defense. They did not get a high pressure rate. And their run defense was bad as well. It was a lot of, if they're getting turnovers, the score will look pretty good. You'll be happy. If they're not, you're in the LA game. To a certain extent, the second half of the Detroit game, although I really liked the first half performance by them. And it's just, it's...
And having a difference maker, a guy like an impact player on defense, a star player on defense, will flip a game for you. The Pittsburgh Steelers are relevant because of T.J. Watt. It's not because of Mike Tomlin being able to coach a team to over 500. It's because T.J. Watt steals games for them. He steals them. You need a player like that. And it's usually easier to get one via a trade.
So looking at that real quick here, you're mentioning trade, and a lot of the trade talk is mainly due to Myles Garrett openly and quite loudly demanding a trade. I mean, all of Super Bowl week, he was on media or Radio Row kind of talking to whoever he could to voice his opinions. I've always been more of a draft guy, though. I think a lot of times free agency is more just fill in small holes. Draft is where you really build the core of your team, and trades can be to add that last piece. I'm still of the belief, while I would love a Garrett, a Crosby, a Parsons, of course, being kind of the latter, and I just don't think he's available at all. For me, it's tough because I do think they have much more issues. I don't think one of those guys fixes all of it. I do think he helps out most of it, though. But how much do you actually trust the Bills to get, I guess, multiple difference makers through the draft on defense? Because up to this point—
That's hard to do.
It's hard to do, but up to this point as well— They have no real issue of getting NFL players.
No.
They have a real issue of getting difference makers. Even go back to a guy they didn't keep, mainly because he priced himself out, but Tremaine Edmonds. You know, he signs a big contract with Chicago, but Chicago fans and Bills fans now will all tell you he's kind of just a dude.
He's there. He's a starter.
Yeah.
But he's not a difference maker. And that was his problem, was his lack of splash plays, where Terrell Bernard stepped in immediately and started causing more turnovers than Edmonds ever did. The Bills had a superstar on defense who was taken away from it with injury before. And that was Trey White.
Yep.
Trey White was emerging as a star player in this league, and then back-to-back years with devastating injuries took away that promise.
Even Matt Milano, you could argue, too. I mean, he had hit the first team All-Pro run, and then injuries took it away.
And it's not to say that the Bills can't build a star, get star players within a draft class. It is getting multiple star players within the same draft class that is a near impossible thing to do. Like, good for Philly for doing it, but also, what helps a young secondary thrive in the league, Zach?
Oh, it's pressure rates.
Great pass rushes.
And it's the thing, too. It's all symbiotic.
Symbiotic.
You
get a difference maker that can rush the passer. You then have an easier time bringing a new kid into a secondary, and they can still thrive because you're reacting to the ball sooner, because the quarterback is getting it out sooner, because he does not like getting smacked around.
I mean, you look at a situation. I think the Super Bowl was a perfect performance by Philadelphia and one of the worst by the Chiefs.
Right.
I've seen in recent memories. But it also
works
does...
works against every quarterback, though.
Yeah, exactly. And you go on any national TV show, any former player was telling you, no quarterback likes to get hit. They all play worse when they're getting hit.
What draws the bank on defense? It's not the secondary players. Some of them do get highly paid, big contracts. But who gets, on average, the best treatment when it comes to contracts? On defense, It's pass rushers.
Even just awards. I mean, Patrick Surtain, yes, won Defensive Player of the Year this year, but a lot of the time it is
pass rushers. Get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it goes. That's how it is supposed to operate.
It's going to be an interesting offseason for the Bills. I think for a lot of teams, too, because Garrett has been so open about wanting to get traded. So it is going to be something. I wonder, though, how much the Bills are realistic in that conversation actually hit them, especially with a team like Washington, who experienced a lot of success really suddenly. And we saw what the Bills did when they did that. I mean, they made a huge trade for Stephon Diggs and then made a big splash in free agency the year later with Von Miller. But we go now to the Wester Hotline as joining us today, UB Women's Head Coach Becky Burke. Coach, good morning. How are we doing? It's been a little bit since we've spoken, but you guys continue to stay super successful.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm happy to report that. It's been a great season for us so far and just looking to keep it rolling.
And so on that, you've now hit 20 wins, the first time under your watch UB has done that. And it's also the fourth program you've hit 20 wins with. I mean, you know, when you look at that kind of success, 20 wins in college basketball is always kind of seen as the benchmark for a successful season. Then it's getting into the tournament. But you know, when you see that level of success, what does that mean? Or the level of success and consistency, what does that mean to you?
It's just a testament to, you know, the culture we've built here and the staff we have in place, our players, and, you know, just the daily grind every day that we work towards in terms of just, you know, cultivating an environment of success in championship caliber basketball. And it is a truly a daily process that we commit everything to, you know, and hold ourselves to a standard that, you know, ultimately, you know, hopes to get to the point where you can reach 20 wins. So I've been really proud of just the work. It's work. It's a grind. It's an everyday type of thing. And, you know, I'm just glad that it's showing with our record and the success that we've had so far this year.
Coach, when it comes down to it, being a successful mid-major program in college these days with the transfer portal and everything like that, you mentioned the consistency, the culture that you want to bring in there. What are some of the biggest challenges that you have to navigate through when it comes to being a top-tier mid-major program and dealing with that sort of stuff, building not only the culture year in, year out, but making sure you're planning for those future years as you go along as well?
Yeah, I think it's just important to be aware of the, you know, the world that we live in these days and the environment that we live in terms of, you know, just keeping your players, you know, happy where they are and giving them the best student-athlete experience that you can. And, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, like, we want it to work on our end. They want it to work on their end. And they want to win. They want to be in a program where they're successful. They have a great opportunity as a student athlete to get a good education and a great playing experience. And, you know, we feel like we provide that here. So, you know, we can only control the controllables. And a lot of that stuff is out of our hands. But the good news is, you know, it's not something that we're just dealing with here at Buffalo. I think it's the landscape across college basketball in general, not just in the mid-major tier, but, you know, at the Power Four level, at the mid-major level, at the low Division One level. It's just something that we're all trying to navigate. And, you know, I think if you are, you know, just if you just do embrace the circumstances that we have every single year and you realize that there is going to be a rebuild every year, then you're prepared for it. You don't want to be delusional about reality. So we just, you know, take those things as they come. And ultimately, at the end of the season, you're going to be in some sort of rebuild every single year. And luckily, that's where I'm comfortable. And that's what I've done my whole career. And so we're ready for it. But we don't think about those things till the end of the season. And we're just enjoying where we're at right now and figuring out a way how to win the next one.
Right, living in the moment. 20-4 overall, 9-3 in the conference, tied for second in the MAC with Toledo. You guys will get a rematch with them at Toledo on Wednesday the 26th. But you are playing tomorrow against Kent State. It's going to be Pride Night tomorrow at 6. Kent State, though, right behind you and Toledo. How much does that game mean for the standings and kind of finishing out the season on a really high note? Especially, you know, Pride Night's always a good night for the fans as well.
Yeah, I think this final stretch for us is going to be a gauntlet in terms of just, you know, we got to take it one game at a time. Our focus is on Kent State. You know, I don't really look at the standings and figure out where we are and who we need to beat. Like, every game we go out there, we need to win. You know, the next one is the most important one. And, you know, as we get closer to the MAC tournament, we'll figure some of the other stuff out. But You know, we want to beat Kent State because it's Kent State, and we want to win that specific game, not for standings or rankings or anything like that. And so that's kind of where our head's at. We're not looking ahead by any means. We have a really, really hard, important job to do tomorrow for 40 minutes, and I think that's where our entire team's head's at. But we do, you know, in the back of our minds, understand the implications of these games, and we need to win as many of these down the stretch as possible. And I think a lot of us have a really, really tough schedule. A lot of those teams you're talking about in those top four or five seeds are going to be battling it out against each other here down the stretch. So it's going to be very, very telling and very revealing going into Cleveland where everybody's at.
Coach, I got to say, I love the somewhat like the hateful energy. Like, you want to beat Kent State because it's Kent State. So first of all, love that sort of thing. Just the hate always can get you going. But what have you learned about this team through conference play for this year as you are still trying to find your way through and not just chasing for the potential of winning the regular season, but heading into the conference tournament in March?
I've just learned that, you know, on any given night we can beat anybody in this league, but on any given night we could also lose to anybody in this league. And that's the beauty of the MAC, and that's the beauty of this level of basketball, is that it's very competitive. That's, you know, why all our players wanted to play in the MAC, why I wanted to coach in the MAC, is because it's just so highly competitive every single night. You know, I believe that we're good enough to beat the Ball States of the world when we play our best, but I believe that if we don't play our best, that, you know, some of those bottom tier teams are capable of beating us. And so we know we have to come every single day, and we've just learned that every day, you know, being solid for 40 minutes is so important. You can't take anybody lightly. You can't underestimate anybody. You can't overestimate anybody. This thing's wide open. And, you know, I think we've let a couple go that we wish we could have had back, but luckily we, like you said, we get another opportunity at some of those teams here down the stretch, which I'm looking forward to.
Before the MAC tournament starts on March 12th, on March 1st, that's going to be a Saturday, you guys are adding Courtney Brown's number 10 jersey to the Wall of Fame. She's the only MAC player of the year on the women's side, a career 16-point scorer, 9.1 rebounds per game. She's on the team from 06 to 2011. What does that mean for, you know, your current roster to see, you know, her name get added to that Wall of Fame, but also just the impact she had on the women's program as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's huge to see another women's jersey up there and just what she was able to do for our program. And, you know, to say you were the MAC player of the year, that's something very, very, very hard to do. When you look at the guards that we've had in this program and the players just in general that we've had in this program, some of the most dynamic players in the country and some of the most high-level scoring players in the country, to not have received that MAC player of the year honor, that shows you how competitive it is and how coveted it is. So the fact that Courtney did that, I think, just tells you what type of player she was in itself. You know, so her numbers speak for themselves, her accolades speak for themselves, and I think this is long overdue. I'm really thankful that we're able to do it this year for her, and it can't be anything but motivation for our players to see that happen. And you know think someday that maybe could be them, or, you know, just the importance of women's basketball here at Buffalo just speaks volumes.
On the West Tour hotline, UB women's head coach Becky Burke. UB women are back in action tomorrow night when they take on Kent State at 6. That can be heard on our sister station, The Bet 1520. Coach, one more from me, and it's a lot due to my own athletic past. I was a swimmer in college, and for us, always towards the end of the year, we did change, you know, how we were training, how we were practicing, and, you know, we called it tapering, but really it was getting ready for the big races down the stretch. Do you guys change up, you know, how you guys are practicing, how you're preparing, what have you, when you do get towards the end of this year? You've already mentioned it's a grind because of how competitive the MAC is, and of course with the tournament coming up, you guys have made the MAC tournament final. Is there any change in preparation, or is it more just fine-tuning the details you guys have been, you know, hammering home up to this point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're a team that changes what we do no matter what time of the year it is. And so I think the duration of practice changes a little bit. You want to shorten it up a little bit. You don't want to be out there for two and a half hours every day. But as far as the speed that we go and the intensity and the expectation and the accountability to practicing at a high level, none of that will ever change for us. And so I think that's what we stand for as a program, just coming out every day, whether we're on the floor for an hour or an hour and a half, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Like, the expectation and the standard is the same every single day, whether we play the next day or we have a week off. You know, like, those types of things never change for us, and we just believe, you know, how you do it one day is how you do it every day, you know. So for us, I think it's important that we keep that same, you know, energy down the stretch, and we don't want to let our foot off the gas at all. That includes practices, and I think that's really important for us.
Coach, last one here from me. When it comes to the recent consistency of success with the UB women's program, basically, what is the pitch to make sure that people are getting down here and catching these games, especially with, you know, Pride Night going on tomorrow against Kent State, March 1st, Courtney Brown getting added to the Wall of Fame. What's the energy that you would like to continue to see from the UB faithful?
Oh, we've had an incredible home court advantage this season, and our crowds have just grown consistently since I've been here, going on, you know, year three now. Like, you know, to look out there and not know whether it's a men's or a women's game because of our crowd sizes this year, I think is such a testament to our program and what we've done and our players. And, you know, they say it sounds cliche, but if you win, they'll come. And, you know, that's what we've done here, going on 20 wins this year. And, you know, we've just steadily seen our crowds grow, and it's been so, so, so awesome to see our community rally behind us. And we have not had anybody that I've heard that's been disappointed of the product that's been put on the floor and their experience when they come. It's such a family-friendly environment, but you're getting really, really, really good, high-level competitive basketball, too, when you come watch us play. And so we love that everybody feels rewarded when they come and they have a great time. And I'm just so thankful for the community and everybody that's come out to watch us. And our attendance numbers have been incredible this season, and we're super, super thankful. And it truly makes a difference. You know, a family that's thinking about, you know, bringing three people, that makes a huge difference. We recognize it, we see it, and we're so appreciative of it. So it's been awesome to see over the course of these 3 years, the fan support build to what it's been this year. And we're just very grateful.
Coach, thank you so much for jumping on with us this morning. Good luck the rest of the way. We'll be listening, watching, showing up, the whole thing. Good luck the rest of the way. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That was UB Women's Head Coach Becky Burke there on the Wester Hotline. And like I said, they're back in action tomorrow at 6 p.m. at home, Kent State Pride Night. If you can't make the game, it's going to be over on our sister station, the Bet 1520. Derek, I mean, you know me because you know I'm a college basketball
junkie.
Yes,
you're a college junkie.
Very few periods in my sports life have I enjoyed more than when both the men's and women's program were like must-watch TV.
Yes.
And they were on ESPN or CBS Sports or what have you. Some of the best stuff is watching good college, local college basketball.
Big Four basketball.
Yeah.
When it's at its peak around here, Big Four basketball becomes a
so
big deal.
Fun.
And for one thing to see, it's... We've seen a lot of success, especially from the UB teams, where coaches have been going into different programs at that point. But you see the UB women's team under Coach Jack, as she had brought them back to some sort of resurgence. And now seeing Coach Burke doing the same thing here for the UB women. And again, consistency in the success of the program overall. With her being able to come in, keep that consistency level, keep that success level, hearing her talking about the home court advantage, mm-hmm. hearing her saying that, you know, one of the best ways to get people in seats is to win. And not only understanding that, but also being able to reap the benefits of you're winning, people are showing up, you get to enjoy the energy. So Big Four basketball has its place here in Buffalo. And when it's peak, you look out.
It's awesome.
It is awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
It's electric.
Yep, 803-0550, the number two call. We were talking about NFL free agency as well. We're still a little bit far off from it, but what do you need to see from the Bills to consider this offseason of success, not only with free agency, but with the draft as well, with, of course, today being the opening of the franchise tag window at 4 o'clock today. The Bengals are expected to be active there with wide receiver T. Higgins. That might upset a number of teams. New England, that might not be ideal. But we'll talk all of that. Four Nations as well. We did get a bit of an update injury-wise for the United States, who will play Canada on Thursday. We'll get to all of that and plenty more after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We do have our final set for the Four Nations. It'll be on Thursday, the United States taking on Canada. The U.S. dealing with a lot of injuries. And namely, though, Charlie McAvoy and Frank Saravelli, he tweeted this out about an hour ago, actually, for an update on him. He was admitted to the hospital last night with an infection that stemmed from a minor injury. Although Saravelli goes on to say he is fine, there is no long-term concern. His status, though, for Thursday is undetermined. He has not been ruled out. Though, Derek, I think we know something that maybe Boston is like releasing a statement or
there it is.
Like that.
He will not play.
Okay.
He will not play in Thursday's Four Nations Face-Off Championship game. So one of the biggest difference makers
yeah.
mm-hmm. on Saturday night
is not going to be in for Team USA at the Four Nations Tournament for the final.
That was a big thing from last night, too, by the way. Like, in a meaningless game in which the U.S. did lose 2-1 to Sweden, can guys not get hurt?
And that's the thing about the Four Nations Tournament.
Oh, my gosh.
Really, really has been fascinating to me is the, even with a meaningless game, the energy was there.
Oh, the energy was high.
It was there. It was hot. And I'm here for all of it. I cannot wait for World Cup of Hockey tournaments every 2 years. Or every 4 years,
yeah,
I should say.
Yeah.
But every 2 years, you're getting World Cup of Hockey and you're getting Olympic play.
This tournament, and we haven't even seen the final yet. The final could send me over the edge. Has sort of fixed like international hockey for me. Like I've talked to you about this.
It was
off
never
the air.
Ready. International hockey, there was nothing wrong with it. And then Gary Bettman and the NHL owners said, "Nah, we're going to take the fun thing that we could do with hockey and not do it."
Yeah, we're just going to ruin it. But for me, like I see a lot of people here at work like wearing U.S. sweaters and stuff like that.
That was me yesterday.
And I have pride. Don't get me wrong. The World Cup, the Olympics, what have you. But I don't have like those experiences. I'm like, whatever. And this tournament has kind of like reawoken that kind of feeling of like, this is awesome.
As a matter of fact, you and I were walking, talking in this sort of thing, walking in here.
Mm-hmm.
You were like, I didn't really care about the Four Nations tournament heading in.
Yeah.
And I didn't either. I was like, okay, it's going to be a nice little thing, fun little tournament, no big deal. It was the perfect appetizer to bringing the NHL back. It's four teams. It's not too much. It was the perfect appetizer.
It's been great.
Your favorite appetizer is that you order at a restaurant, the Four Nations tournament was that for you, for me, for everyone in between.
Yeah, it's been awesome. The only frustrating thing is I heard Sneaky Joe say this yesterday. I almost don't want the NHL to come back. Because I'm going to go back to watching like some kind of bad teams. And
we're
like,
also talking about that in Buffalo, where
they are last place
in the Eastern Conference, and it's relatively like set in stone, their last place in the Eastern Conference.
I mentioned it last night in the nightcap, where I'm like, what I want so badly.
What if I'm Columbus?
Yeah.
A team that has been dealing with, you know, an offseason of tragedy again, but your team is in a playoff race.
Yeah.
Guess what? I can't wait for hockey to come back at that moment. I can't wait for my team to come back. So,
maybe have like this new grab of fans who are jumping in for the second half of the season. Like we were talking about it too.
And a Columbus with a why not us season right now.
And you know, for awful circumstances, they're going to be a wonderful story if they make the playoffs. But you know, we were talking about the ratings they got on Saturday, 4.4 million.
Yes.
For the first matchup between U.S. and Canada. You know, what's it going to be on Thursday for the final? And I just wish the Sabres could be legitimately a part of potentially like a real big growth for the game. Of, hockey's like in the mindset of people. And it helps, too, that the NBA's All-Star break, which, I mean, this is replacing the NHL's All-Star break, was a nightmare to the point where the only time you hear any national shows talk about it is not to be like, oh, it was really cool. Like, my son had a great time or daughter had a great time watching it, and even I enjoyed it. It was how much of a cluster you-know-what was that, and why are we still here?
It is becoming a point where I talked about it at length with Joe Kelly yesterday of the death of All-Star games.
Yeah.
And how we're watching it all happening in live time. Combining it with the success that the Four Nations tournament has had, I don't know if the NHL goes back to All-Star games and they just let people have off for a couple of years. Like, you have off for the year before your Olympic play. You have off for the quote-unquote All-Star break before your World Cup of Hockey. Like, I think every other year you just let the players rest.
It might become something where, you release the All-Star teams. And I think they'll always have the events.
Because the last time we saw an NHL All-Star event, Nikita Kucherov decided to say, heck it, and not care at all.
I think you'll have events where, you can go meet fans, and it becomes like this kind of big thing.
Yes, but it's not anything that will resemble the on-ice product.
Yeah, it's a lot like what the Pro Bowl is now, which is it's more for like kids and families to show up and see their players, and they kind of play like goofy games.
And NBA players want there to still be an All-Star game.
I just don't know how long it's going to last.
Ready? It's also that players like Steph Curry changed the game so much that the All-Star game is just moonshots.
Yeah.
It's how deep can you chuck a three? Let's just chuck threes. and have that kind of day.
Because everyone can shoot now, because you kind of have to. You have to be able to shoot in a modern NBA, especially if you're going to make an All-Star team.
And that's the thing, is that the game changed so much that the All-Star game does not involve, like, Nikola Jokic. He had said something about the fact that, like, it doesn't, like, I don't belong in this.
Mm-hmm.
And for Jokic to say that, one of the best players in the NBA,
yeah,
to acknowledge, yeah, the All-Star game, like, I don't really fit for it because it's long ball on steroids.
Yeah.
Jokic, obviously, one of the best
players. He's a big guy that can pass.
One of the best interior players who can dish.
Mm-hmm.
The dish part is pretty easy, but, like, how much big boy play are you really getting into in the All-Star game?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Yeah. I think it is an interesting topic of the death of All-Star games, and are we really heading there, especially when you're seeing some of the stuff, Four Nations, the World Baseball Classic from a few years ago, too, where, like,
And that was before the season, but you saw how much passion there was there,
NBA,
and how much people loved it.
The NBA players also pitching on the idea of, like, hey, maybe we do it U.S. versus best players of the world.
Yeah.
International play could get the players going, and you clearly see it all the time.
There's a clip now going around from Kevin Durant for the Paris Olympics, him crying about playing for the United States and how much it meant to him.
Yeah. And I think that an NBA squad of the best players of all of Europe, that could be a very dope roster.
I think the Europeans win. I'm just going to say that right now.
Yeah.
I think if you put together a roster and they had actual practice time and could form chemistry.
Luka, Giannis,
Jokic.
That's
Wemby.
Just, yeah.
you're going to have an issue.
You're having fun.
Oh, 803. Man, that makes me want it so bad. 803-0550, the number to call. We're also talking NFL offseason with the franchise tag window opening today. And with that, we will go to our first caller of the morning, and we go to Tim in South Carolina. Tim, how are we doing this morning? You're on WGR.
Good morning, guys. Sorry I'm a little late to the party of your prior discussion in the before you got the
email. Oh, no worries, no worries.
No worries, no worries.
I just wanted to chime in really quick because my major takeaway from the Super Bowl, and I know that we have recency bias, but my major takeaway was how the Eagles defense didn't really do anything crazy. They didn't even blitz, I don't think. But they really did a good job of marrying the pass rush with the coverage. And my biggest thing that I want the Bills to do this offseason, of course, we would all love the shiny new superstar on the defensive line. You know, how realistic is that? Not sure. But I would really, really like them to get much better in the secondary. I feel like a main reason that Patrick Mahomes is so frustrated during the course of the night was because he had no first read, no second read. They were just taking away that easy button throws. And a couple years back when the Bills played the Bengals in the playoffs, it was just like Joe Burrow just dunking underneath us and dunking. And I can't stand to watch that. And I think that that's a big thing of why the Bills fail in the playoffs is because teams are able to do that. So I like what they're doing with bringing in that defensive backs coach from the Patriots. It seems like we're getting a new ideology in the room, in a couple different rooms. Also, the guy from the Saints on the D-line. I like the way they're heading, but I really, really, really would like them to get deeper in the secondary and then also kind of bring in that, you know, first or second round pick on the defensive line. Just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts about marrying those two up. I think that that's the way that this league's going.
Tim, I have said a lot about the marrying of pass coverage and your pass rush, and every year it seems like they're asking for a divorce in the last game of the playoffs that they end up playing in. And I do think that a pass rush helps you get a stronger secondary, but that said, scheme was an issue of you're playing too far off, you are letting players you're letting quarterbacks have these throws before the pass rush can even arrive. I'm starting to see a bit of a dynamic shift as well. Bobby Babich called more man coverage with this defense than Sean McDermott or Leslie Frazier ever had.
Sal's been on this a lot, mentioning that, well, there was a bit of a change.
There's
they
a
are
bit of a
calling
change.
Man more.
They're calling more man coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So I suspect that it's already going in that direction of you're not going to let quarterbacks get those easy throws. Now you need to put the other piece there. You're changing up a little bit of the schematics. You're playing more man, which means there's going to be a little more bump and run. What's that got to do? Disrupt the timing. And once the timing is disrupted, what do you need? You need a pass rush to get home. You cannot afford to have the same old story on your defensive line right now because they're not getting home.
I do the games. I help broadcast the games, so I don't typically get to watch them live. I'll always hear the radio coverage first. So, you know, everyone that works here on Sundays will get to laugh at me, you know, yelling at a touchdown or banging the table because of a turnover, what have you. And it would.
And he's always ahead, by the way.
Yeah, oh, I'm like 15, 20 seconds ahead of everybody. But something that always kind of frustrated me is, of course, I know when a bad play is coming. And Chris Brown does a wonderful job calling the games. And it felt like all year, you know, here comes the blitz. Oh, when whoever this team has picked it up, you know, or you know, they're not getting any pressure. He's got all day to throw, you know, all that stuff. And it did feel constant. I don't know if the stats necessarily back it up. I know Greg Rousseau has been pretty good with pressure rates and stuff like that, not necessarily finishing off plays. But that is something they desperately need. And to the caller's point as well, I'm so glad he brought this up because it was frustrating me the night of the Super Bowl. Let's not act like Vic Fangio was doing anything special.
He didn't blitz once. They got home with four constantly. And Mahomes also was making terrible throws. Now, to Fangio's credit, he didn't change what was working.
Exactly.
He was just like, no, keep going. Like, just keep doing what you're doing.
Keep doing what you're doing.
But that also, I think, is to Howie Roseman's credit. And I'm not saying anything new. I think a lot of people give Howie Roseman a lot of credit. It was not the same thing because they gave up a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns in their 2017 win. But they built a very similar system, which is we need to have a rotation of defensive linemen. We need to be able to come at them in waves and get home with four.
I will say it also is near impossible to replicate the roster that Philly constructed. And they could be looking at a lot of trouble.
Oh, they're going to be the Saints in like 2 years.
In like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the Eagles are necessarily a blueprint. They are an anomaly of how much talent they were able to collect onto that roster. And they will pay the piper for it. But they got the ring and it counts.
Yeah, we all know it doesn't matter.
Kind of like how the Rams did the heck with them pick strategy. Yeah. And they paid for it eventually. But they got the ring for it. I think that there is a nice middle ground that the Bills can succeed with here. And that's why, as everything that Tim said, like I don't know if it's a superstar that you need an edge rusher. That's why I think that it still needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of the fact that if you're going to change the dynamic of this defense, you're going to call more man coverage, get me someone that can steal a game.
Yeah, 803-0550, the number two call. Talking Four Nations, talking the NFL franchise tag window opens up today at 4 p.m. And really, whatever else you want to talk about. Again, 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And this is WGR.
Coach Kreider kicks the puck onto his stick. And it's cleared ahead by Jack Eichel. Here comes Zach Werenski. Saved by Harrison, rebound, score!
They lost.
Man, they lost. The Jesper Bratt goal, by the way, I think that made it 2-1 Sweden.
Yes.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I have just loved this tournament.
Has been the shot in the arm that hockey has desperately needed its return to ESPN.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was also a thing, too, of like their Sunday and Monday shows.
Yes.
Leading with U.S. Canada, or if not leading by, Monday, making sure to talk about, like, look at the Tkachuk family. What is this? And I think that's another thing, too, Derek. It's been this tournament's been a mix of a love letter to the modern game, which is more skill-based. It's speed. It's just the highlights should be on TikTok and Twitter constantly building
the
up the game.
The Connor McDavid goal from that night is still
the first goal.
One of the nastiest things that you're going to see.
But like I brought up with the Tkachuks, it's also a love letter to the old style of hockey and the fighting and the passion and the bitter hate that you have for your opponent.
That game as a whole was the ode to the power forward.
Yeah.
Players that have skill, that have tenacity, and have physicality. When you have players that have the complete package, that's what that game was the ode to the power forward.
I've loved every second of it. And again, I'm not the biggest fan of fights. Do I like them every now and then? And does my heart rate get up? Absolutely. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I don't need it, though. I'm more into flashy goals and sick
let's
passes.
Let's call a spade a spade. We, as a human race,
sometimes
are drawn to the barbaric tendencies of our forefathers.
And it's fine, but I think that's why I like
it. And it's okay to admit it.
Yeah.
As long as you can recognize it.
But I think that's why I loved Saturday so much.
Like begrudgingly, because I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. I don't really love fighting, but at the same moment, you see three fights in 9 hockey seconds and you go, even I'm just like, what is going on?
Or here, I mean, like, just as Sabres fans, what's one of the best plays in Sabres history? For many people, especially if you're under the age of 30, it's Campbell's hit. It's the big monster boom, and of course it's RJ's call on it as well.
But we are still savages by nature.
But like, I think that's always been something that is a part of hockey, and I don't want it ever to completely go. I don't want it to affect health of players. I get it. But it is also something that's so intrinsically hockey.
And that is the problem that I have with hockey, with the NHL, I should say, is, guess what? You can still have clean, tough hits. And like you said, you don't want to endanger the future or health of players.
Mm-hmm.
So when players cross the line, actually punish them properly.
Yeah, that's something they miss too. This whole self-punishment thing is a huge miss.
Yeah.
It's a constant miss. Oh, it's a constant miss. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here for another hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.